Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history. Jim and Austin, the earthquake in Haiti has reminded us of that poor nation state. They've had troubles ever since, I guess, the nation was formed. But we forget that we were involved in Haiti in the 90s and the things that we went through there and, you know, finally pulling out of the nation. But it looks like they're basically wiped out. Is that right, Austin?
Well, look, the United States and Haiti have had been long periods when the United States has been extremely active in Haiti. Think of the Marines in the 20s to the early 30s. Haiti, in many ways, you know, a probably better way to approach this is to give you from personal experience. I spent not quite 2 weeks in 1987 driving around Haiti with a friend of mine who was a civil engineer, expert actually in building roads. And it's a fellow I went to college with, and we went to Haiti because, the Duvaliers had fallen in Baby Doc fell in late 86, I think it was, and here was this opportunity for Haiti to escape the ravages of the Duvalier clan and really 2 centuries of terrible poverty-inducing governments. Here was a rare opportunity. So we went there, did Port-au-Prince. I hired a driver, and we went out. And constantly, my friend was pointing out, this is what engineers do. Look at that, Austin. That's slope failure. Look at this. This is terrible. Look at the engineering job on this. We were told anecdotally, and I have read this in other places, that some of the roads, now they would be patched, were actually built by the Marines during the quote-unquote Marine occupation that I referred to earlier by the U.S. Marines. With a sidebar on this, coming back, the driver decided to take us by one of Papa Doc's villas, and imagine walking through. You could tell it had been attacked. The big, huge wrought iron gates had been bent. Things were ripped off, and no one was protecting this at this time. We went in, and the machine guns had chopped up the inside, shot up the outside of the house, and grenades. They'd used grenades on the pink marble bathroom tiles of this bathroom that's the size of most people's bedrooms. I mean, or larger. It was huge, and a methodical destruction. My driver says to me, Mr. Bay, people were very, very angry. And I said, I understand it. Papa Doc's been dead a long time. Oh, Baby Doc used this place too, but people were very, very angry. So this was a moment, too, when Haiti was talking about a constitutional opportunity, and they were writing a constitution and the like. Now, you know the trouble and turmoil of the 1990s with Aristide, Clinton administration, quote-unquote, there was some, remember when General Powell and Sam Nunn both had to talk with President Clinton about how they were going to carry this off. It was an invasion to liberate and to rebuild. Haiti has, if I sound like I've invented this number, I have, but it's to carry an idea. Should 70%, maybe 80% of its political class be in jail? Let Jim address that. He might say 100%. But the point is that it's been ruled by a kleptocracy, thieves, as in kleptomaniacs. If I went through all of Papa Doc's philosophy of what he called nigritude, but it was a philosophy of really where Haiti must stand by itself because we are oppressed by everyone else. They don't get along with the Dominicans over on the other side of Hispaniola, the Dominican Republic, and a bad United States and bad everybody else, just hates Haiti and the like. So we depend on ourselves. Of course, that means he just steals everything he wants to steal and leaves the less rest of the country with the immense poverty and the dregs. Now, my engineer looking at slope failure, we're talking about a huge hurricane. That's what the thought was. Well, a major earthquake will do obviously even worse damage or similar damage to a huge huge hurricane, even more damage to those poorly built cinder block houses. And then just cinder blocks, the things that looked like they were made of plywood and plaster in some of the truly impoverished areas that we drove through. And those haven't changed. They haven't changed for decades. The other point to make, too, about Haiti's impoverishment, even until I got these figures from both the U.S. State Department, and I talked to a Canadian consular official in 1987 about this, perhaps 30, 40, 50% of Haiti still had significant ground cover into the 1930s. But now, jungle, whatever, left was 1 or 2% in 1987. Everything's been hacked back. You've seen the pictures that are on television. You fly over it, and Haiti looks like a moonscape. It is an ecological disaster, disaster area. There are studies out there, and you know, how to defend them, are they right or wrong, that 1, 2, 3 million people on Haiti are essentially living on the assistance from the United States, Canada, and other outside countries that provide them with food assistance because the land can't carry the population. Therefore, their leading export is what? People. And we have these mass exoduses. Where do they want to go? Just sidebar on this, Dan, they don't want to go to Cuba. They go and come to the United States. And here you have, that's not the only reason the United States is interested in helping Haiti. There's a humanitarian component to it. But in the background to the Clinton administration and now in the Obama administration is, we've got to do something about Haiti or what? We're going to deal with one of these human wave invasions, if not just the United States, but other places in the Caribbean. You've got a huge problem. I wrote a essay back in the 90s saying if the Clinton administration was taking on a 3, 4, 5 decade developmental issue. Well, the United States really didn't come through with it. We've had UN peacekeepers there. They've mostly been, as Jim Dunnigan often points out, UN peacekeepers provide hard currency income for a lot of small, the armies of a lot of small nations. How much good do they do? Don't know. Haiti's left with a huge economic, political, and environmental reform issue.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, talking about the different things that have happened there, we have a shot that the U.S. Coast Guard took from out in the bay, and obviously the port has been wiped out. But more interesting to me, and something that hasn't been talked about, is you could look up on the hills and see all the landslides that have occurred. And so if we see the landslides there in that area, they must have happened all over the nation, and there's probably...
Dan, that's the slope failure. And
right.
My friend, again, was a guy I went to a college with, good friend of mine and my wife's. It became kind of our joke. And I said, what about that? No, that's already failed. You know, we were kidding about it. But the thing is the message to that is that you could see it. I'm traveling with a man whose experience in building roads Texas, China, and other places. He'd done both, and road design. And wait a minute. We're going to talk about getting relief supplies from Port-au-Prince to a point somewhere midway in the island, even in the best of circumstances, when I don't have to deal with a hurricane or an earthquake that's destroyed the transportation system, either the port, airhead at the airport, or the road network, you were looking at a place that was extremely fragile distribution network in 1987 under the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
So I could only imagine what kind of overwhelmed situation the humanitarian aid agencies and the U.S. military face when they come in after the earthquake. It's going to be worse.
Yeah, I know here we deal with landslides all the time in our canyons, and when one occurs, you know, it will take a huge amount of equipment and men to clear it. You know, they usually get it cleared in a day, but they've got multiple landslides all over the nation that are blocking those roads. That, you know, the news hasn't even brought that up yet. You know, they're talking about the bodies in the streets and like that. And I think you know.
Wait a minute. One thing you have to keep in mind is that the earthquake was centered on Port-au-Prince, and
yeah.
Most of the damage is in Port-au-Prince and its immediate environs. The countryside is relatively undamaged, and that's where many of the people are fleeing to. So the people you have still in Port-au-Prince, I think the metro population is about 2 million. Are the ones who haven't got relatives out in the country.
Jim, there were some significant casualties in some of these outlying places because you had reports and some very, very authoritative ones from the Dominican Republic about medical teams operating out of the Dominican Republic dealing with all these casualties. They weren't just from Port-au-Prince, but your point's right.
Yeah, but the casualties you're going to get out in the countryside are going to be a lot less than you have in Port-au-Prince because you simply don't have the structures out in the countryside they collapse would injure anybody.
Right.
You do have
and of course, it happened during the day when most people were outside anyway.
Well, Jim, why don't you talk to the you wrote an article this just recently, I think it was today or yesterday, about the airdrops. We've got some photos of those airdrops up on there.
Yeah.
Why did the Air Force again decide that they needed to start airdrops?
Well, actually, there are two things you have to consider with Haiti. One, they just recently celebrated their 200-year anniversary of being free from France. Secondly, and we did a piece on that, right? They did it in the Haiti section. The problem with Haiti is they've had 200 years to get it right, and they haven't figured it out yet. Now, this is not just Haiti. This is a problem of all of, you know,
the Caribbean.
Latin America.
Yeah.
They have been unable to create the kind of civil society you have in North America. And that means economic freedom and, you know, a relatively, you know, corruption-free justice system. I mean, that's what it takes. They haven't got it. That's the problem throughout Latin America, which in the last several decades, a lot of prominent Latin American academics have picked up on that. They said, look, forget about socialism, forget about all these other isms. Our problems are more basic than that. And this is slowly catching on. I mean, you know, a lot of politicians are at least paying lip service to it. But as Austin was pointing out, you know, you could put most of the, you have grounds for putting most of the commercial and political class in Haiti in jail. Which a lot of people would like to do. But these are the guys with the guns. They have the money. They own a lot of the tangible assets. You can't put them in jail without, you know, collapsing what there is of an economy. But the economy is not going to grow because the people who are already there simply won't allow it. They do not allow it, and they will not allow it, and nobody's been able to convince them to sort of open up. I mean, the money that's been poured into Haiti just since World War II, if they'd done in Haiti what they did in Taiwan, in South Korea, in Malaysia, and Malaysia's a Muslim country, where basically you educated, made everybody literate, made it easy to start a business, what a different place it would be. You know, our electronic components would be made in Haiti instead of, you know, the Far East. But it didn't happen, and there's no movement right now, and no serious movement to make it happen. All right, so in a country that's already a disaster, you have a natural disaster comes upon him. What happens? Well, 6 years ago when you had the tsunami, the big tidal waves in Indonesia and Thailand, the U.S. Navy discovered that it was a wonderful, you know, disaster relief force. And they basically, retooled themselves in the last 6 years to do it even better. And that's exactly what you're doing. The Air Force also, the Air Force has always been prepared for humanitarian, you know, airdrops. The reason why they were a little reluctant to go in there now is because the utter chaos that normally exists, political chaos, on the ground in Haiti. The cops are totally corrupt, even the new, you know, UN-approved and trained force is not a big improvement. By Haitian standards, you know, Haitians will have told me anyway that, you know, they're better, but that's not saying much. You know, they get arrested if they try to pull some of that crap off in New York City, where a lot of Haitian immigrants head for, because there's a large Haitian community here. Air Force was reluctant to drop it because they checked with, you know, their sources, you know, State Department, Special Forces, that mostly informal military sources. They're the only ones you can rely on. And they were told, anything you drop is going to be grabbed by the local, you know, gangsters and be available for sale, you know, within hours. They made further inquiries and they got some Marines and Army troops in there, and then they were told, here are the coordinates of places where you can drop stuff, where it will be distributed by guys with guns, our guys with guns. But that's a very real problem there. The Air Force over the last few years have been doing these humanitarian airdrops in Afghanistan, where they have to basically get the okay from the Special Forces that, yeah, if you drop it in this village, they're organized down there. You know, the gangs, the local bandits aren't going to grab it. The local villagers have their own, you know, little militia, and they will gather the force, the food and what have you, and see if it's distributed. But unless you can depend on that, you're basically just, you know, paying your contribution to the local bandits. So that was a very real problem. But the Navy, actually the entire military, the United States military, in the aftermath of Haiti, of course there's already criticisms, but, you know, in the sober aftermath of the relief effort, I think you'll find that there's a lot of praise to go around, because they're doing a lot of great work. They already have a hospital ship. If it's not there, it's
right.
Almost there.
Yeah, it pulled into Baltimore, the bay yesterday. So
yeah.
The comfort's out.
And they already have the carriers. Within hours of the, even before they got permission from the Haitian government, the ships were told, and the Army units were put on alert. And as far as I can tell, and again, I don't know if this has been officially released yet, some of the Navy ships were basically told informally, here's a new bearing, a new course to make. And so they were basically on their way and ready to get inside Haitian international waters, you know, once the government had said, oh, yes, please help us.
Yeah, I've been up on the military sites trolling, and they were turning destroyers around immediately. The people that we don't talk about too much, that we forget about as part of our military, the Coast Guard had cutters into the area.
Yeah, almost they were there first, I believe.
Yeah, and they were immediately doing an evaluation of the port and figuring out how to get the ships in there and like that.
Dan, let me make a point.
And
about
something that. Like just before it cases us again, the military has developed a very effective informal internet-based communication system. I just did a piece earlier today before I went to work on the Defense Language Institute immediately distributed, you know, phrase cards and stuff like that for Creole, for that really weird version of French they speak in Haiti. But even before the Defense Language Institute did that, the troops were distributing their own versions of these phrase cards on their smartphones. And so a lot of the Navy, Marine, or Army personnel, you know, the iPhone is very popular in the military. I think they got 4 or 5 times the proportion of military users as they do, you know, the general population. Because, let's face it, you can play games on the damn thing when you're sitting, you know, around waiting for something to happen. But there's a lot of military software, including language software. In fact, one guy was telling me, I got an email, he says, yeah, there's even something you can learn Creole. It's a free application from the App Store. So the military spread the word through the informal network, which didn't exist before the, well, it sort of did, but it wasn't obviously as fast and as effective.
Right.
So there was a lot of chatter in the background about how we're going to deal this before the brass, put the official flag down.
Yeah. Austin, you had a comment?
Let me mention something about the Coast Guard, and some of this may be dated, but when I was there in 87, in a restaurant, I bumped into a senior Coast Guard officer, a commander, who told me that he was operating as the naval attaché in Port-au-Prince. I said, that was interesting. And he says, well, look, this has been a Coast Guard billet as a attaché or working in the embassy. And he said, by the way, over in the strait between Cuba and Haiti, the U.S. Coast Guard monitors that regularly. I don't know what our force lay down was just before the earthquake, but those waters have Coast Guard operations.
Well, Guantanamo is right across the straits.
Well, it's not that far away either. I mean, it's not. The point is the Coast Guard has a great deal of familiarity with Haiti. Remember, in the 90s, with all the Haitian boat refugees, it's the Coast Guard that meets them first. Same thing with Cuban refugees coming across from Cuba. But, Jim, you brought up trying to contact the Haitian government. Just what is the Haitian government right now? This is sort of a softball setup for you. And what the heck has the Haitian government done?
They have put together Preval and company. They have put together a government, over the last 5 years. They've had the UN peacekeepers in there, and they basically cleared out most of the more powerful gangs, street gangs. Now, some of them are left-wing, some of them are right-wing, but they're all basically bandits. And they brought order to some of the worst, slums in the capital. And there were some of the areas out in the countryside that were basically under the control of local warlords. And they have been, if not totally disarmed, largely, nullified. So the government is the only government in Haiti. But now that has been damaged to a large extent. A lot of government facilities, including police and army barracks. Well, there aren't really no real army barracks anymore. But anyway, the security forces have taken a lot of just plain old physical damage. Their families are now, out of house and home. Even the White House, what do they call it?
The palace.
Well, the presidential palace. It's in ruins. So most of your senior government bureaucrats are homeless. So you can imagine the kind of chaos that's going to add to a government apply to a government that was just barely hanging on, in the best of circumstances. So basically, people are glad to see anybody they can trust, and that basically goes back to the U.S. Marines, which a lot of Haitians have a traditional memory of. I doubt if there are very many old-timers left to remember the Marines were there, but that was the best time Haiti had ever had because they had basically an honest government. The Marines were there for like 14 years.
That's not the way the anti-American spiel goes.
Not talking for a public audience. He'll tell you, Grandpa, great Grandpa, whatever. He had a job. He wasn't going to get robbed by some guy with a gang behind him. It was something that they were not able to keep going because within 5 years of the Marines' departure, I think the government had already turned over twice, and there was already the military strongman back in power, and it's been downhill ever since.
Yeah, what is the future, Austin? I mean, what is going to happen there?
All right, I'll fall back on what I wrote. In a column that, as I recall, ran in the San Antonio Express News. May have run in the Houston Chronicle as well, now that I think about it. But so it's 15 years old, at least, is that Haiti requires, if you're going to quote-unquote mitigate the problem, I didn't use the term solve it or resolve it, it is nation-building of one of the more complex sorts because of extensive, embedded, endemic political corruption and business corruption, culture of corruption. Now, that's going to be interpreted as harsh until you actually go to Haiti and deal with. Not, if I said, there are Haitian reformers, Dan. There are many Haitians who have, Jim was talking about the Haitian community in New York City. There are Haitian communities really throughout the United States, and they know the difference between what goes on the island, as they call it, meaning back home in Haiti, and here in the United States. They make individual choices, and as I tell this story anecdotally, I can tell you the Haitians who put it this way. Why should I go back and suffer through that when I've gotten a visa or green card or I'm now a U.S. citizen? The classic tale of the immigrant to the United States. I don't want to go back there. It's too messed up. I spent most of my life trying to get away from it. Nevertheless, you do have a corporate body of knowledge of Haitians who understand what needs to happen. But what needs to happen is so involved, so demanding, the problem so overwhelming that you're looking at, as I said, three decades, four decades of nurturing and change. And you've already seen, initially from Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, and then from a French minister, I forget which ministry he was in charge of, about a U.S. covert occupation of Haiti, as we show up to try to salvage and save individuals, save people's lives, no matter where they're from. Not just American citizens. You can see what the evidence is. This is a humanitarian exercise on a large scale that there's only one country in the world that's ever existed who was able to do it. That's us, and we go and do it. But we're still charged with, as Hugo says, it's an American occupation, an American invasion. And over time, as you start getting the society up on its feet, Haitians running things, cleaning up the business and political cultures, you'll get more and more of this anti-American friction, and you'll also get plenty of Americans saying, why should we pay for it, giving our own recession and the like. I understand that's a domestic political consideration, but you'll get all of the standard attacks on Uncle Sam, even though, and therefore after a certain amount of time, in some ways what I'm saying is exculpates part of the Clinton administration's effort, is a certain amount of time the United States just says, okay. And the thing is, and we don't, and it's not quote-unquote carried through, there's sporadic development, haphazard development, and then you have those people with the get up and go and brains who'll do anything to try and get out and get to the United States. So you have a loss there of your intellectual and business leaders or the like, the people who would change that business and government environment for the positive side. I don't want to devote my life to doing that. I want to get someplace that's better for my family. And that's not typically what you will hear in a mainstream media discussion of one of Haiti's problems, but I'll guarantee, this is not unique to Haiti. You see that all over the world. Men and women making a decision is, I don't want to fight it. I want to go elsewhere. Just a sidebar on this. I've heard this from Iranians. I've heard this from Arabs. I've heard it from Kenyans, Ugandans, and that's, there's just too much, and there's too much I want to do with my life. And
that's how the United States really supports tyranny and dictatorship. We're the safety valve. We take the people who, if there was no United States or even Western Europe, and they had to stay, they mount a successful revolution, and probably just replace one side of the dictator with another. But be that as it may, these people have some place to go. And some got, like even the Soviet Union in the 80s, they were starting to say, well, let's let these troublemakers out. That's one of the big arguments against, all the embargoes on Cuba. They said, we're forcing the people who are ticked off to stay there. But hey, they find a way to get out anyway.
Well, they come here, and what do they do for the United States? This is the other thing about the quote-unquote anti-immigration arguments. Some of the most able and entrepreneurial people we get are these waves of immigrants that come into the country.
Yes. Exactly, exactly. But one of the you know, the unintended consequences of that is it takes a lot of the steam out of, you know, revolutionary and change movements in a lot of these countries, and they just sit there and fester, which is something I'm sure, you know, over the next decade or so, many PhDs will be earned, you know, going into various aspects of that. But, you know, just standing where we are is basically, you had strategy page, you know, following these places and standing back and taking the long look at them, as we do all the time. That's one of the things you see. They're educating a lot of people, and where are they going? They're not going, you know, to the capital or, you know, to some good job in their own country. They're getting out as fast as they can. And right. It's even happening in Haiti. A lot of these guys who do have a thing going down, their owned land or businesses and what have you, that place does have an economy, their children are leaving.
Yeah.
You know, they try and get one of them to stay and keep the family business going, but a lot of them look around and say, oh, hell with this. Because basically the humanitarian aid makes it worse. Because, you know, not to sound, you know, too Malthusian here, but it keeps a lot of kids alive so they can grow up and be unemployed.
Yeah. Hello, United States. Hello, Canada. That's where
right.
I want to go. I think that's a pretty good point to end on because it's not a happy point, but that's where we're at.
I had one last question that should just take 1 or 2 minutes, and that is the United States military going to be able to control the disease that usually pops up after these types of things?
Yes.
I'd say that's a tough call, but likely yes, especially as fast as you talked about giving new bearings to ships and how quickly we responded. Yeah, I think Jim's probably right, but there are a lot of things that you have to watch out for, particularly with all the lack of clean water in the place.
Right. Well, the crates of water that I've seen them shipping over is just amazing.
Yep. Well, that's one reason for that. And the Army undoubtedly has a lot of their water purification units in there already. We've got a lot of practice, you know, from being in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so our water purification guys are probably among the best in the world. But public health is something the Army in particular has always been very good at. And, of course, we've been there before. Indeed, there are several ongoing humanitarian operations in Haiti directed towards, you know, just that problem. But we'll probably stop any large and embarrassing outbreaks of communicable diseases and then get out of there. And the place will go back to its usual state of, you know, quiet decay.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll end it there, gentlemen, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Dan.
Bye.
Bye.